What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode, second episode of season two of the Pardon podcast. Brady Falk back with us. He did such a good job in the opening episode that we brought him back for another one. So it is me and him again doing episode two. So thank you guys so much for listening. Brady, thanks so much for being back. Awesome to have you. Loved having you last time. So looking forward to chatting again this time.
Of course.
So I know that you were at the 3M this week. We're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to talk about a little heated debate that was going on via the Instagram verse with basically just a majority of curated experts. But also, I think there was a couple of other people who chimed in. And it's been going around on several Instagram accounts as well, which I should probably post with because it seems like a pretty popular topic. But is the argument of should Justin Thomas be on the Ryder Cup team? And yeah, so if you follow PJR, who is the one of the other hosts of this show, he asked that question on his Instagram. And he and I, along with you and some other people, were kind of like duking out some answers in a very respectful but at times heated way. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, and then I'll be happy to give my thoughts on it. But so should Justin Thomas be on the Ryder Cup? Go.
No.
Unless my caveat was unless he makes a top 10 finish this week, that he shouldn't be considered, and that his consideration would only be reasonable if he has a really good week this week. I just think that the other top 12 guys on the points list right now are a lot hotter than he is. Right. And I think that you got to take who's hot. If we want a chance to win, you got to take who's hot. I know that PGR's argument was that he's fiery. He brings the heat. He can go super low. He obviously can. He brings a ton of energy. But I think that a lot of other guys are playing some better golf right now, so you got to give them the go.
Yeah. No, I mean, I 100% agree. I was pretty vehemently against putting JT on the team, and it's though I've never been the biggest JT fan, it has really nothing to do with like being a fan of JT. I just think like I try to equate it to other sports, and I think if you put somebody on a playoff roster or you know, like an all, I don't know, whatever, a contending team or put him in the starting lineup, and he's had such a bad stretch as JT has had of golf, like you may get booed out of the stadium. So I feel like it's put like trying to put somebody who like, well, he could hit a home run, but he's 0 for his last 45 at bats. But let's put him in a crucial moment. Yet we have a guy who's tearing the cover off the ball. And we're not going to put him in because this guy could hit a home run. I mean, I don't know. For me, that's like doesn't seem like a very good choice. So the guy put up 280s in the last two majors, which, again, is awesome for us, but terrible for him. And I just don't know how you can justify, like, well, he did this in Paris 2 years ago or 4 years ago or whatever it was. And it's like, well, great. But, like, just because he did that then doesn't mean he's going to do this now. And I don't like the argument of, like, he's a veteran leader. I just don't kind of – I don't see JT as a leader. Maybe he is. Maybe he's a great clubhouse guy, whatever. But, again, if you equate it to other sports, if you're going to have a good clubhouse guy, a veteran, that dude does not play very much. Like, if you bring in an Albert Pujols late in his career or a Jason Giambi or these guys who were known for being great mentors, fine, but they didn't play. And they certainly really weren't playing when when it really mattered. And I know that's a little different, but I think the analogy stands pretty close of, like, I don't know if JT's the guy I want in there when you're going to leave out one of these following guys, Homa. I mean, obviously, you're not going to lay out Spieth if Justin Thomas comes, but like Homa, Cameron Young, Colin Morikawa. Who's the other guys on here? Homa, Young, Keegan Bradley, Morikawa, or Fowler are going to have to be one of the guys that don't go if JT does go. And
yeah, I mean, and it might be a young team, but you got Homa, Young, Morikawa. Like those are going to be your guys for the next hand. Like those are going to be your guys in the years to come. So
yeah,
it'd be the perfect opportunity to put them in the fire and see how they perform and kind of give them that opportunity, because they're the ones that are playing well right now. So in my opinion, they deserve to be on the team, and they'll probably earn their stripes.
And also, I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know how old JT is, but is Justin Thomas that much older than these guys? Like, I can't imagine the age difference is that.
31.
Okay. And maybe it is. That's fine. I have a hard time I don't know. I mean, I know it's kind of a what have you done for me lately kind of gig. And you can say he's fiery and he's nasty or gritty or all of those things. I personally don't think like he's known for chugging a beer and screaming at the Ryder Cup. I don't call that leadership or being like nasty or gritty. That's just something like a dumb college kid does. So that's my take on that. Has he played well in the Ryder Cup? Yes. But, and I brought up this point, and I don't know how you can speak to it too, but it's like, if we're going to talk about guys who have the potential to go low and have had really good Ryder Cup careers, well, why not pick Phil Mickelson? Like, he's not close in the points, but he obviously proved he can still go low. Like, he was competitive at majors this year, more competitive than Justin Thomas was, and he has a crazy Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
He's got some of the, you know, it's like the third most points of anybody, you know, like, especially that's still alive or in the modern game. So I was like, you know, Tiger can go low. It's not, doesn't mean we're going to pick him for the Ryder Cup, but the dude still has the ability to go low. And that's not to like make fun of PGR or kind of like say that point is a dumb point. My only point is just like, I don't know how you justify a guy who shot in the 80s recently to be like, yeah, he's got to be on the team over guys like you're saying, who are it week in, week out competing, when Justin Thomas didn't even make the cut at the 3M.
Yeah. And I don't know the guys, like, obviously I don't know them personally, but, you know, Homa, he might be an inside locker room guy. He might bring that, like, team atmosphere. And Cam Young, he might be super fun to hang around with, that, like, he's fun in the locker room. You know, we don't know that side of it. So that's another part too. Like, yeah, I'm sure JT's a great time, and I'm sure that he brings a lot to the locker room, but some other guys might too.
Yeah. Well, and then if you, like, again, if you want him as a locker room guy, then just bring him along as a non-playing, you know, I mean, like, he can still be there. It just doesn't mean he has to play. But don't waste a spot. If you're going to play him one match just so he can, like, rah-rah the fellas, I don't know, like, make him an assistant captain or just a non-playing, like, teammate guy. That seems like it would make much more sense to me. Especially, I mean, if he misses the cut at the Wyndham, too, it's just like, how many cuts do you get to miss and still make a Ryder Cup? Like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because I feel like he has a lot of pressure on him this week. Because he must really want to make the playoffs, obviously. And this is kind of his last chance, and I'm not sure exactly what place he has to finish in to make it happen, but I'm guessing that he's going to need a really high finish even to get into the playoffs with the way that the points work.
Let me look it up. I think it was a 12th place finish. Might not be.
And it probably depends how the other guys do too.
Right. He's 79th, so he has to jump 9 slots. And it doesn't say exactly that I can find, but
if I heard it correctly on the radio today, they were talking about that, and that the top 70 going into this last week of the regular season stays the top 70, at least in the last, like, 3 or 5 years or something. There weren't any bubble guys in the 71st, 72nd, 73rd position that actually made it into the playoffs because of this week. So it'll be interesting to see if that stays true this time.
Yeah. And there's some pretty big names historically on the outside looking in besides JT, like Shane Lowry was 76th. I think Adam Scott was 80 or 81. And there was one more big name, you know, just like traditionally, which I think, I could be wrong, but I thought like Adam Scott had made every single FedEx Cup so far. Or maybe it was Matt Kuchar. Somebody has made like a crazy amount of Ryder Cups. Or gosh, we're talking about too many different things. FedEx playoffs now. So it'll be interesting. I mean, you're talking about leaving out a bunch of guys. And if JT doesn't get into the FedEx, he can't earn any more points towards the Ryder Cup either. So then you're talking about a bunch of guys just continuing to leapfrog him, because I believe every other person besides him is in the FedEx Cup playoffs that are on the Ryder Cup standings. I think.
Probably, yeah.
Besides
Brooks Koepka. Yeah.
So, and I think everybody else is a PGA Tour guy except for Brooks. And Brooks is already on the, as of right now, he automatically qualifies. So we could talk about him not like wanting or not wanting him on the team as much as we want, but he automatically qualifies right now because, hey man, you won a major. So, So do you think, would you take basically, I know we were talking just like, as it stands now, like the top 12 are pretty solid. Would you just take that top 12, or outside of JT, would you consider anybody else on the Ryder Cup team that's outside of that top 12?
There's so many good players, and the top 12 are just, they all seem so solid right now that it's hard to make an argument that any of them shouldn't be on the team.
Right.
So that's the only way I can look at it. Like, there's a lot of good guys outside of that top 12 too.
Right.
But it's just there's so many good players on the USA that the USA has to pick from. So I like 1 through 12 right now.
Right. I mean, I was just looking at this list. It's wild that Keegan Bradley is so high on that list, but good for him. I can't see kicking anybody out in favor of 13 Sam Burns, 14 Justin Thomas, 15 Denny McCarthy, 16 Kurt Kitayama. Will Zalatoris is still 17th, even though he hasn't played all year.
Yeah. Wow.
Then Harris English, Tony Finau, Chris Kirk, Thagala, Scheck, Hoagie, Moore, Henley. So, I mean, really the only two that I would like to see outside of that top 12, I mean, Tony Finau, obviously, and Sahith Thagala would be the only two guys that I would just like to see on the team just from a enjoy watching them play golf standpoint. The other guys, you know, like as much as it would be a life change, like Russell Henley doesn't get me excited about being it. But honestly, Wyndham Clark doesn't get me excited about being on the Ryder Cup team. He wins a major and he's already in, you know, he's number two on the list. So he's going to be there. And who knows? He may be able to go out and just light it up. But I'm just like, well, Wyndham, like who would have thought you'd see Wyndham Clark on the Ryder Cup team? Or Brian Harman.
I guess there's a lot of perks to winning a major. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I wish I would have put money on those two to be 2 and 3 in the Ryder Cup standings at the beginning of the year. That's crazy.
Vegas would be freaking out.
Yeah, it would have been insane if anybody put money on those two guys. Yeah, I'm going to parlay Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman into a 2-3 slot. Seems like a smart play. So it'll be drama filled for sure. I'll be interested to see how it works out. I know that there's a lot of people willing to die on the JT like hill of like he should be there because of his record at the Ryder Cup and his history. It just doesn't do it for me, but who knows? I mean, here's the thing though, and it might be a moot point because I feel like, and I don't know what you think, it feels like he's going to get chosen. So we can debate it all we want. But it does feel like at the end of the day, Zach Johnson does go with kind of what PGR and a lot of these other people are saying is like, well, he has a history of being very good at the Ryder Cup. So, you know, I don't know how close Zach Johnson and Justin Thomas are, probably pretty close. So that probably plays a factor in it too, where it's like, yeah, you're okay. And I wonder how true that is or how much it's just like, well, he's already going to get chosen. It's kind of a foregone conclusion kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, that very well could be in the books already. Zach might already have made his decision. Who knows? But
right. But somebody in that list is going to be super pissed. I don't know who it'd be.
Yeah, probably Ricky or Morikawa, whoever's sitting in that 10, 11, 12
spot. Yeah. And I almost think you have to go, you know, this sounds bad, but I almost think you got, if you're going to leave somebody out, it has to be Ricky Fowler. One, because, like, again, kind of the same conversation is, yes, he has been playing good golf, but he was bad for a pretty long stretch of time, whereas Morikawa is one of the elite iron players in the game, and I don't know how you can leave, like, one of the current and future possibly superstars of the game out for Ricky Fowler, who, like, you know, I mean, which is crazy to say this, but probably on the tail end of the prime of his career, where he's going to be probably more of a marketing figurehead, like, well-known type player. But I mean, like, if we're honest, there's probably not a ton more years where Ricky Fowler stays competitive, whereas a Colin Morikawa's got a long, I could be wrong. I mean, I hope I'm not. I love Ricky Fowler, so I hope he does participate or play, you know, can compete. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know how you kind of leave Colin Morikawa off the Ryder Cup team. That would be pretty insane.
Yeah. I don't know what he's been doing lately. I feel like he's been struggling a little bit. And I was surprised that Ricky wasn't higher on the list based on how much we've been hearing his name in these tournaments lately. But
yeah,
I think that's because he had a slower start to the season and all of his points have been in the last probably couple months here.
Yeah. And I think too, just the story of how, like, kind of his, like, fall from grace, not really, but just like his fall down the rabbit hole and he's, like, built himself back up is a bigger story. So you hear about it more, whereas Colin Morikawa is just like, he's had, like, not the greatest year, but he's still pretty solid. Like, he's not, it's like he's plummeted and then, like, trying to claw his way back up. It's like, well, you still see his name on the weekend. It's just he's not really, like, closing out the deal. So the Ricky story is definitely probably much more interesting for sure.
Yeah. Like, Ricky or Morikawa is probably racking up, like, T15s and top 20s. Right. And we just don't even know it because he's just always there.
Yeah. Still making way more money than any of us. all right. Well, we can put a pin in that for now, unless there's anything else you wanted to add. I'm sure we'll have way more to talk about on it next week after this tournament shakes out the way it does. And we'll probably be eating our words when JT, like, wins this week and, like, rockets himself into place. So, I mean, maybe he'll prove us wrong.
I hope which he is does.
Fun. Yeah.
I mean, a huge JT fan. I love him. I just think that he isn't playing good enough golf to earn a seat right now.
A lot of people love him. I'm not a huge, I say I'm not a huge fan, not because I'm like, I can't stand JT. I just, like, he's one of those guys that, like, and I know golf is kind of like this, but he seems like he's had everything kind of served to him on a platter. And so, like, those kinds of guys I have a hard time identifying with. Like, my dad was a pro. I grew up on a country club. I went to, you know, like, I've never wanted for anything. And so I was basically just, like, a front row seat to this kind of life. This was pretty much my lifestyle. I mean, and speed, you know, it's weird because to me, JT comes off more as kind of like, oh, how do I say this? I don't know anything about JT personally. This is just all my, like, I've cooked it up in my own brain, but he seems like the frat guy at, like, a really, like, at the, like, the rich guy frat in college who would just, like, you knew him in high school and he wouldn't acknowledge you in college because he's now too big of a deal to, like, acknowledge you. Whereas Jordan Spieth, though he had, like, a very similar upbringing of, you know, like, he comes from wealth. He's not, like, and all this stuff, but, like, he seems like the guy that would, like, recognize you and come down and say, how, you know, if you were a nobody and he was a somebody, whereas JT would just be like, that's just, I don't know. I get that vibe and I could be completely off because I've heard he's very nice. So I don't know. Maybe that's why I can't really root for JT, even though I can root for Spieth and they seem like, I know they're best friends and very similar upbringing. So who knows? I mean, I'm just maybe making all of that up in my head, which is entirely possible.
But. Yeah. We don't know the guys, unfortunately. So we can only cook things up in our head.
Yeah. Which I do frequently. Tiger and I have had great conversations in my head. Just
hey, me too.
Yeah, right. Who hasn't? Who hasn't talked with Tiger on a couple holes? Okay, anyway. Tell me about, so you went to the 3M. I really didn't watch a ton of the 3M because I had no interest. I mean, like, really, it was not, like, that interesting of a tournament to me. And I saw the final leaderboard, and I was just like, what? Like, good for those guys. Yeah. But again, just, like, not, like, a boring, you know, kind of a bore. It seemed like a boring leaderboard. Like, nobody would get excited about it. So, but you were there. It was in your hometown, home city. So tell me about it.
Yeah, I actually, I love to go to the tournament because I used to work at that course. So it kind of means a little bit more to me, I guess. I love going back there and seeing it. So it's been 10 years since I worked there, but the Champions Tour event was there. It was the 3M Open for the Champions Tour back when I worked there. And then 4 years ago, maybe the PGA Tour started their event and the Champions Tour moved somewhere else. So cool that we have an event in the Twin Cities. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like going back to the course. It's a really cool course. It's easy for the pros. There's not much trouble. The scores are always right around 20 under. I think it was 22 or 23, something like that this year.
24 under so, one.
I mean, they 24. Yeah. So they tear it up and it just, I don't know. It's really fun. It's a big hit in the area. A lot of people like to go to it. It's a lot of fun, but the field I found was interesting because a lot of, not a lot, but the notables, there were some bigger names that missed the cut that made the weekend a lot less of what it could have been. Obviously JT was there. I think Hoagie missed the cut. Tagala missed the cut. So there were some other bigger names that were there, but missed the cut. So it made the weekend a little bit less exciting of what it could have been. I'd made plans to go on Saturday. Yeah. Yeah. He was another one. So there were some players there.
There were.
And then, so at the tournament, there's a spot on the front nine that's kind of cool. It's right on 3 green, 4 tee, 6 green, and 7 tee box. They all are in one little area. And so if you hang around there, you can see 4 different holes and, like, you know, you just walk like a minute and you can be on 4 different holes. So it's a really good spot. We hung out there for a lot of the day and it was really interesting because you could get on the rope for any group. Like there wasn't a huge crowd there to, you know, you're not 10 deep looking overheads or anything. So that was kind of cool. We could get as close to it as we wanted to anyone. And then Finau's group came through. And Finau was literally the only group that we saw that had a following. And his group was, like, 10 deep. He had like, security there and a ton of people following. And that was the only group. And I think he was on Saturday, the second to last or third to last group. So he wasn't even in the top, and they're in threesomes too. So he was in like the top 6 or top 9. And his group had way more following than even the leaders did. So that was kind of interesting. Hodges was leading the whole time, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I believe.
Yeah.
So I got to see him play. Won by
7 shots. I mean,
yeah. And that's what he was leading by most of the day Saturday when we were there. He was up by at least 4, I think 5 almost the entire day. So it really wasn't like a competition at all. So we hung out at those 4 holes. We went to the back 9. Hole 18, I was listening to the radio after we left and learned that last year the 18th hole at TPC Twin Cities was the highest scoring to par on any hole in the PGA Tour last year.
Really?
So, that really surprised me because it has eagle potential. It's a huge risk reward hole. It's awesome. I heard Johnson Wagner on Golf Channel say that it's his favorite par 5 on the entire PGA Tour. And it's a great finishing hole. I've always loved it. But you lay up You can either lay up short of the pond on the right or hit a driver down a skinny fairway to the left of the pond. And then the pond is all the way on the right side and then short of the green too. So you can have two really tough shots and water is in play on both of them. Or you can have three tough shots and water's in play on all of them. So
does that make sense?
Yeah, it's an awesome hole. So I sat there and watched guys come through and yeah, it was great. They had a lot of stuff for spectators to do, so we were able to check a bunch of things out. We were there for way longer than I thought we were gonna be. We were gonna just pop in for a few hours and watch a little golf, but we were kind of checking things out for like 6-7 hours, so we were there most of the day. It was a good
time. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I was just gonna ask, what do you think it is about a tournament like that where like a Lee Hodges win is like dominates there, but these big names don't make the cut? I mean, what is there anything to that? Is it because the tournament doesn't mean anything to them, or is it just like this was just an anomaly where it fit certain guys' games, and that's why you see a bunch of people? I mean, like Lee Hodges, JT Poston, Martin Laird, Kevin Streelman, Kevin Mitchell, Wu, Ryder, Aaron Baddeley, and Tony Finau, Cam Davis, Stevens, Grillo are like, that's the top 10. And it's just like names that you really don't see a lot of other places for the most part. But then you have guys like Thigala can't make the cut, JT can't make the cut, Gary Woodland can't make the cut, Sepp Straka. Is there anything to that? I don't know if you saw anything or have a theory on that, but I'd be curious as to why that tournament seems to favor maybe guys that are not as well known as opposed to these guys who you would feel should be in the top 10 of this tournament.
Yeah. Well, my thought on this week specifically is that it's the week after a major. So all the top dogs are over in Europe. If they do come back to the U.S. to play, which a lot of the guys didn't, they're tired from a major in Europe. So they're still recovering from that. But besides that, I think it's an odds game. On a smaller tournament like this, you have all these names that aren't contending in normal tournaments because the best players in the world are at those tournaments. Right. So there's a lot less top dogs at the 3M Open. I think it gives a lot of other guys opportunities. I think the PGA Tour schedule really did that this year with the designated events. The non-designated events made it so that these guys we might not hear about as much can have a chance. Like Chris Kirk, I think it was one of the first tournaments of the year when he won, and we hadn't heard his name for a while. And it was, you know, it's not, I honestly can't remember the tournament that it was, but maybe not one of the bigger tournaments. So Eric Cole was in that playoff with him, and he's another name that we hadn't really heard before. And I saw him at the 3M Open. So it's like these guys that aren't at these big tournaments that we all pay attention to, they can contend here and they have a chance. And I think it gives them a good opportunity because I think like Sam Burns, he did really good in a few non-big, like, 2 or 3 years ago, I think it was two years ago. Like he started doing good in these not huge events. And then it kind of, I feel like it gave him the confidence to play better in the bigger events. So I think it's just more of a numbers game where you don't have a ton of top ranked players. Like gives the other guys some opportunity.
Yeah. And like you said, if you do have those top ranked players, like I wonder why like a Finau. Or did Finau even play in the British Open? Did Finau play in the British Open?
Yeah, I think he did.
Okay, yeah. So I wonder, why are those guys just coming back because they're so close in points and they're trying to get as many points as they can?
That could be. Finau was the defending champion, so that he might have wanted to come back for that.
Right.
I heard that he really liked the tournament and he had a good time in the area. Just on the local news, I heard that. So maybe that's why he just wanted to come back and be in the area again. But it probably had something to do with him being defending champion, previous success.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I honestly didn't even think about the British Open, those guys being super tired and not really being like Fagala, Justin Thomas, Lowry, those guys like not being able to compete, Sepp Straka. So I just thought that was interesting. But I know they're trying their best to, you know, make the Ryder Cup, make the playoffs. So I'm guessing they just like a lot of those guys just have no choice. Like if we want to, we got to figure out a way to earn some points. And yeah, it's just always weird to me to see those big names like not make it. Just the golf is so weird. Like any guy, I mean, the British Open's a perfect example of that. Like Brian Harman just dominates all week against the players that are obviously just much better than he is. But it was just his turn, I guess, whatever that means in the ether of golf lore. But
yeah, pretty fast. That's why we love golf and I hate golf. It comes and goes so fast.
Yeah. No, I mean, 100%. 100%. All right. Well, I'm glad that it's awesome that you had fun there. I still have never even been to a pro tournament, which is embarrassing that I have a golf podcast and can't like talk about it because I've never been to an event. So hopefully that's coming soon. Any of our listeners who want to just like, you know, fly me out, put me up and give me tickets to an event, just let me know. I'm always open.
Yeah. It's a good time. The tournament that we really should go to is the Waste Management Open. Yeah. I've gone to that a handful of times, and if you're going to go to one, that's probably the one to go to.
That's what I hear. That, or I keep putting in my name for the Augusta raffle and I keep getting turned down. So as we all do, we all got our emails. So, just have to wait now until 2025, which is pretty wild. But it's going to happen. I feel like one day it's got to happen.
Well, if you want to be risky, I did go to the Masters in 2009, and there's a lot of people scalping tickets once you get there. So if you want to fly
Yeah, I'm sure they're also pretty pricey. So.
Yeah, probably.
And I know a lot of people do go, even if they don't win the raffle. So I wonder, I would love to know, I wonder what the percentage of people who are like, cost be damned, I'm going to get whatever tickets I need to get into this thing. And I'm sure people make just crazy money scalping tickets because how do you not buy? I mean, I'm sure everybody isn't it sold. Like they have to sell them. I can't imagine anybody is just not buying those from people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they can probably put any price tag on them that they want.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to. It's like the only tournament that Tiger Woods comes to every year. So everybody, you know, I mean, like it seems like now anyway, it's the only one he's able to like hold up against because it's so early and then he just breaks down for the rest of them. So, it's worth it. We gotta go. I would love to go to the Waste Management. You know, it was when we were in Phoenix, all that stuff was still up and I was just like, that would be fun to, it'd be fun to go see. But again, I'm down. Just let me know. Just let me know when we're going and I'll be there. So two big pieces, well, I guess big pieces in the golf news world now, or that just happened was one, I think Monahan came out and said that the PGA Tour is not going to adhere to the USGA golf ball rollback. And then the other piece of news that I think just came out today is that Tiger Woods has been put on the policy board as like a player, like director and advisor at the urging of the PGA Tour. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on either one of those. You can, whatever order you want to go in or talk about one or the other. If we don't even get to it, that's fine. But like, not a lot of Tiger news. So whenever he shows up, it's always kind of interesting.
Yeah. I think both pieces was the PGA Tour trying to win back the players.
Yeah.
Honestly, the ball rollback, I don't know who is a fan of that. I don't know. Besides, the argument that I've heard is that the golf courses, they can't keep getting longer. They're spending too much money expanding and more land to water and take care of. That's the only argument that I've heard for the golf ball. Besides that, I don't think anyone wants it. Rolling the ball back, they say that like because people are hitting it too long, it benefits the long hitters. I think rolling it back benefits the long hitters more because then instead of the short hitters having a 9 iron and, or a 6 or probably a 8 or 7 iron into the green, maybe they're going to have a 5 or 6 iron, for example. So it's just more punishing towards the short hitters than the long hitters. So I don't think it really accomplishes that mission. But I was definitely happy. I was watching Golf Channel when that news came out. They're interviewing the players, and that was, that was last weekend during the 3M Open. And all the players that they asked about it were like, finally, like, we didn't want the ball to be rolled back. I'm glad that the PGA Tour took a stand on it, and everyone seemed happy about it. It'd be crazy if the ball was rolled back.
Yeah, and I just wonder, like, if the PGA is not going to do it. We talked about this a little bit last season, PGR and I did, but, like, so now the PGA Tour is not going to adhere to it, and it really, I mean, it doesn't affect any other country's golf because it's just a USGA thing. So really now you're only really punishing amateurs and other USGA-sanctioned events. So, like, if the PGA Tour is not going to hold on to it, does that mean now the US Open – it's just going to be this, like, one tournament that we watch where everybody's hitting the ball 30 yards less than every other tournament that they play in? That may make the U.S. Open unwatchable.
Yeah, that would be crazy. And I think with the PGA Tour taking a stand against it, and I feel like most of the manufacturers have taken a stand against it, all the players have, there's no way that they can go forward with it.
I would think so. Well, if the manufacturers say we're not making a rollback golf ball, then how can you even have a rule? Do you know what I mean? Like, you can make all USGA the rules that you ball. Want. Yeah, I was going to say, is the USGA going to, like, manufacture and sell a ball that's like, this is only available, we give them at all the USGA events? Just so such a weird – it was such a weird deal at the first place. And, I mean, I get – that it does get ridiculous. I mean, I can understand because, like you pointed out, the 3M Open, like, it's not really that challenging for these pros. So they're going to go out there and shoot 24 under par. And I don't know what that – part of me likes seeing them struggle. Like, I like watching a U.S. Open that's tough. And there's only a handful of guys under par. Like, that is a test of actual golf skill. And I just don't know how much, like, a TPC – and TPC Twin Cities is certainly not the only course that this happens on during the PGA Tour. So I do get it from that standpoint of that, but why not just make the courses tougher? Like, clearly you can do it if you want for a U.S. Open or – Augusta can be punishing if you hit it in the wrong place. Liverpool can be, you know, all of these British Open courses can be punishing. So why instead of, it seems like an alternative to, if you want the golf ball rolled back, just stop advancing it. Just stop it now where it is. Just put sanctions on, hey, this is the tech we're going to go with, and we're not going to advance it anymore. But also can't you just make the courses tougher? I feel like that maybe is an easier, like, thing to say, but why can't these courses be, and again, I'm not saying like a TPC Twin Cities is ever going to be like a US Open type course, but you could make it tougher. Like, you could grow the rough out. You could make the greens, you could dry the greens out. You could make them faster. Like, you could make it tougher. And I just am like, why don't we just do that? And even the 3M Open needs to be like a test of skill. Like, is there a reason why Lee Hodges needs to be 24 under par? I don't know. I'm just
throwing it out there. I definitely prefer watching golf when par is a good score. I absolutely love that. It was interesting to see at the course all the new pieces. Well, most of the new additions to the course were tee boxes, and they were pushed absolutely as far back as possible on every single hole. So I'm not sure the exact yardage, but they couldn't have made that course any longer. Right. They moved land. They made it as long as possible. So that obviously didn't help get the scores higher. I think that, like you said, it'd be growing out the rough, definitely making the greens fast and like still keep them pure and playable, but make sure that they're fast. And then probably some bunker additions, so guys just aren't bombing it all over the place and getting away with missed shots.
Yeah. But
yeah, I feel like there's easy things to do, like growing out the rough and making the greens faster.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and bunkers are a different story because then you're asking a course to spend money and time doing that. But it doesn't take any. I feel like it's like you said, like growing out the rough or narrowing the fairway down.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're professional golfers. They should have to hit it down a like a runway. Like, make them hit it down a runway. And if they're not, then they're in the fair. I mean, in the rough. Like, let them just hit out of the rough all day if they want to hit it 320, and reward those guys that are accurate instead of long. Like, why do we always have to we don't always have to reward the long guy, because then Rory, guys like Rory and these are always going to benefit because they can always clear the bunker no matter how far back you push it. But if over the bunker is nothing but rough, then you have to, it almost kind of evens the game out, because then a guy like Brian Harman, who's going to hit it 250 or 260, now Rory has to decide, am I going to hit it 260 as well and be in the fairway? And then it's like a match of like, well, who can shape their iron in there? Who can putt? Who can chip? Or am I going to bomb it and just play from the rough all the time? I don't know if that's valuable. I don't even know if that would be entertaining anymore to watch all these guys hit it out of the rough all the time. But I feel like I don't know. I think I would almost rather watch that than just watch a guy just like, well, this guy's at 20 under par. Like, this is not... we got a whole group of them between 17 and 20 under. Like, I don't know what that does for golf.
Yeah.
If that's, and I don't know if that's entertaining. I really don't. I mean, I didn't watch the 3M Open, and I have a hard time watching tournaments like that for that reason. Cause I'm just like, this doesn't even seem like, it just seems like they're out with their buddies. Like, they don't even seem stressed or anything. Like, there's no stress to this tournament, which I feel like if you're going to play professional golf, there should be some level of stress. And it's fine if every once in a while that happens. Just like, again, we're going to bring it up. I mean, we brought up a ton in the first season, so we're going to bring it up again. We got Tiger when he was blowing the field away, winning by 10, 15 strokes. That then is just like, well, that's an anomaly, and I'm fine with that anomaly. If the course is clearly tough and everybody's at even par, and this one guy has just figured it out, then that is a cool thing to watch. But I don't know if watching guys go so low all the time is just kind of like, I think it kind of gets old. It's the same thing as when you watch, when you watch a baseball team 10 run everybody in like high school or just watch these guys. It's like, yeah, they won by 10. Like that gets boring. If you just basically know that that's going to happen over and over again, you're just like, I would really love it to be a close game. That would be more fun. Just like change it up a little bit. So that was a rant that I didn't mean to go on. I just think that there's stuff that we could do to make golf a little bit more like difficult for these guys.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. That's just my two cents. Your paradigm isn't helping them either.
Yeah. That's true.
Making the game too easy.
Yeah. But again, I mean, I don't know. Go back to wood shafts, I guess. I mean, if you want to roll some stuff back, let's just all play with wood shafts again. Watch dudes just snap, like that a baseball. Would be like a test. It should be like baseball, where like, well, they broke a wood bat. Like they got, you have X amount of shafts. If you break three wood shafts, then you got to hit your three wood for the rest of the day. Like, figure it out, man.
That would be great.
But I do think golf needs to get tougher. Like it just has to, I think on an overall scale, you have to get these courses to a place where it's just more challenging. But like you said, I know that's tough when it's like, well, they push the tee box back as far as it goes. Like I can't make it any longer. They're hitting from the street, which also may be fun.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting dynamic when you get the pros that you're trying to make these courses harder, and you like they're as hard as they can get, and the pros are still destroying them. And then there's these public fields where it's wide open, there's no trouble, and we're trying to make the game easier for the amateur. So it's like it's, you know, both ways. You're trying to make it harder for one group and easier for one group, and it's tough on both sides.
Right. Well, I've often wondered what it would be like for a pro. And again, I mean, most of the courses that we play are so short, so I don't know if it would really make a difference. But like, when was the last time these guys went to a, you know, like went to a course where it's like, oh, there's no grass there. That's just dead. You hit it in the middle of the fairway, but they haven't watered. And so you're just hitting off of a stone.
That would be great. Or greens that bounce all over the place.
Yeah, there's just like nobody's prepared their divots here. Their ball marks. Like nobody's prepared them. So, yeah, you just have to like figure that out. Like nobody's prepared these. Or like this guy, yeah, there was obviously a jackass here dragging his feet. So best of luck. Figure it out. Yeah, you know, they put us on a piece of fair. They put us on a piece of tee box today that's sloped. There's no flat ground here. So... And I'm sure they can, you know what I mean? I just wonder, like, sometimes almost, well, even though they've added the length and you talk about the rough, there's a lot of those aspect of those courses that actually seem easier, because I don't know about you, but I don't get to play a lot of courses where when I'm in the fairway, it's lush and sitting up every time. Like, or you hit on a green, you're like, I just know that that's going to do what I need it to do because it's a true green. Like, it's an actually, like, it's made to do what it's supposed to do. Because everything's so well manicured. So I think in some ways they actually do have it easier than like an amateur that just goes plays a regular public track that's like, this is in horrible shape.
Yeah, no, that's funny that you bring that up, because we talked about it at League Golf on Monday night, where a guy in my group was like, yeah, the pros, they're so good at, well, obviously they're good at putting, but he was like, the greens are so difficult. I'm like, well, yeah, they're difficult. They're really like, they have a lot of undulation. They're super fast, but they're literally perfect. Like,
yeah,
very rarely do they miss a putt because it hit something or it didn't roll the way it should have. Like, it's usually because they probably misread it. Cause usually, I mean, they're pretty much hitting it how they should every time. And the ball's rolling how it should every time. But at the courses that you and I play, it's hitting something. There's a patch of grass that wasn't mown. The speeds are different on every green. You don't know what you're gonna get. There's dead patches, like you said. So, yeah, that's a really interesting point.
Yeah, and I also like. And how many of us have ever get to play golf where it's like there's literally another person who may know the game better than we do, telling us what to do for every shot, just being like, I wouldn't do that. That's a stupid move. Don't do that. I mean, I wonder how we'd all be better if we had a guy who knew the game really well or the course really well being like, don't hit it over there. Like, I know it looks good. Don't hit that shot. I mean, how many times have you gone to a course you've never played before and been like, I didn't know there was trouble there. Where they don't have that problem. Yeah, they don't have that problem. So, you know, or like in the old days where caddies used to read the green for it, like read your putt for you. Like, yeah, if I had another person to read every single putt who had gone out the day before and walked the course and knew every measurement, I'd be a better golfer. I could probably shoot under par if somebody had all that information for me. I was like, don't hit it here. Don't hit it there. I mean, you still have to hit it there. And I get that part of it. I'm just saying, like, you know, I can string together a decent round on my own. And if I could have somebody that's like, no, that putt actually, it does look like it goes this way, but it's actually going to like fall back to the left. Be like, oh, that was nice to know, because it doesn't look like that. So yeah, I don't know. I always think about that, because I'm like, sometimes they have it easier for sure.
Yeah. The difference between them and us is that they're playing for a couple million bucks and we're paying $100 to play.
Yeah. And that is a kicker too, because I'm honestly not a very good golfer under pressure. Like even like a little tournament, I do get like tense, and I'm not good at that for some reason. All right. Tiger Woods policy board, thoughts on that? And then we'll just wrap up with that, I think.
It was awesome. We hadn't heard his name. He hadn't been around in a bit. So it was kind of cool to hear that he was stepping in. It sounded like he wanted to try to make an impact and fix things up the way that he thinks they should be. So we haven't heard his, like, he's never gotten into politics. He doesn't give his opinion out very much. And with this role, he's gonna have some say in a lot of say in what golf is going to look like. So it's awesome that we're going to be able to hopefully hear what he thinks on the situation, and hopefully he can make a positive impact for the game, because everyone's going to listen to him, that's for sure.
Well, I think it's the players who wanted him in this role, right? Like, that's from what I read, is that he got put on this policy board because that's at, like, the players' urging. Like, I think that's what it is. And so, and I don't know how much he wanted to do it, but it seemed like throughout this whole LIV thing, even with Rory being the face of it and really kind of coming to the PGA Tour's defense, it almost kind of seemed like, I don't know. Did you ever watch the show Succession?
No.
Okay. Well, there's like, the premise of the show is like, there's one like older man who like has this media empire, and then his three kids are like kind of always jockeying for position and like wanting to take over. But there is like an older son who like is set to take over. And then the dad kind of, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I always just kind of felt like the PGA, the thing with Rory was kind of like this succession where Rory was kind of like supposed to be the guy, but then you always had to ask daddy Tiger, what we all wanted his opinion. And it was just like, if Rory can't get it done, like, can Tiger please speak to somebody, because they'll listen to like dad. And it's like, he didn't really want to be involved in the company anymore. He was just kind of off doing his own thing. And it was just like, hey, I need you to come back and fix this. Or we need you to come back and like sit in on this meeting, because like, I'm really not able, like, I don't have the clout I think I do to move the needle here. So, you know, I think it seems like it's going to be a thing where Tiger is very much pro, like players membership, that kind of thing. And it seems like a lot of the criticism of Monahan and the tour execs is that there was no communication and transparency with their own membership, and they had no idea. And I don't know if they can pull that now with Tiger there. Maybe they still can.
Yeah.
You know, and I know Tiger's not in every meeting, but it seems like you're not going to be able to get Tiger to be this guy who's like, well, I just am not going to, I'm going to tell everybody what I know. And I don't know if that's the case, but that's what it seems like.
Yeah. Well, from what I saw, it's he volunteered for the position. Like, he wanted this spot. They created it for him. And then the players, there's like 40-some players that wrote this letter to the PGA Tour, and then Monahan like got him the spot or whatever. But also the board of directors, it gives the players that sixth spot. So now there's six players on the board, and then six others on the board, five of which are like business type guys or something. And then I think the PGA of America or one other group has that six spot. So, and they tend to vote with the players or be on the player side from what I hear. So the players technically don't have majority at 6-6, but they have more say than they've ever had. Not only is like Tiger on the board now, but he made a new spot. So they have actually more say. So yeah, I think it'll be very interesting. It was really cool to hear. From what I saw, the players were pumped about it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a good thing, because there's definitely more communication coming from the PGA Tour, it seems like, from Monahan. So
I think they had to.
It'll be good for the players. Yeah. There couldn't have been any less communication.
Right. Well, I just don't think you can have a you know, I mean, with like literally your top stars coming out and talking about how bad your like two-facedness is, with like Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm coming out and just being like, yeah, pretty like, you know, basically calling bullshit on the whole thing, talking about how bad of a decision it is. And I'm honestly surprised that there wasn't a statement from Tiger about this whole thing. Like, he was pretty, I mean, I know that he has had surgery, but we haven't even heard how that's gone. But two, just like, he's been pretty mum for a long time on any of this ever since he, like, since we've seen him play last. I haven't even heard anything about him or anything like that until this announcement. So, you know, seems like another way to also keep him around the game if he's not going to be participating. Hopefully we'll probably at least hear, like, his take on things more so than we ever have, I hope.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's like primetime Tiger never would have done this. It's like he can't play like he used to, but it's cool that it seems like he still wants to be involved in the PGA Tour, and he made it what it is today. So I think it's cool that he's trying to hopefully protect it and make it better. So, I mean, it's, he made it, he made the PGA Tour what it is. So it's cool that he's going to be on the board and have some say on what it looks like going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you that. And I don't think if Tiger Woods doesn't get hurt or have his scandal, he probably never does this because he's probably dominant. If not right, if not still at 47, like he very recently would have become not as dominant and not, you know, and so it's almost like he's kind of embracing that ambassador role that like a Jack or an Arnie finally had to do. And we just never thought, I don't know if we thought we were going to see that from Tiger. We kind of just thought he would be this like assassin that then just disappeared into the ether. Like we'd never see him again once he was done being like, you know, once he was done, he's like, well, there's no one left. I've killed them all. And so I will just retreat now and you'll never hear from me again. But it's awesome that he sticks around and does these things and is going to do like that night golf league and stuff like that. So like, you're going to see Tiger still, even though it's not probably, I don't know. I mean, we could talk about that too. I mean, I was going to say we're going to wrap up, but we can do whatever we want. Is like, he has this surgery. So does that mean he's going to like, does he think he's going to play more? Like, why have the surgery if you didn't think you were going to be able to compete anymore? I don't know. I mean, that's a tangent that I'm happy to talk about, but maybe he does feel like he can still like win a major or win a couple majors. I mean, what do you think? I mean, talk about it. I want to talk about it.
With his drive and his competitiveness and the way that he's wired, he probably would do anything possible to get back and play and compete again. So I don't know too much about his surgery. I don't know exactly like what the recovery percent, like, you know, how typical recovery is after that type of surgery. So I'm not sure on that, but it is, you know, it's probably hopefully he wasn't doing it just to get back to like living normally. Like hopefully it was back to get back to, you know, being the best that he can be on the course too.
Yeah. Well, I think, didn't they fuse something in his foot? It was kind of the same thing where it's like he was rolling on it and it was causing a ton of pain. And so now, like, though he'll have less mobility, he'll have less pain. So if he can even get to a place where he can even now, like, pressure on it, you know. And I don't know how much it was affecting his regular life, but it just seems like, unless it was just like, I can't even get out of bed and walk and live a normal life. Doesn't seem like if you're an aging golf star, you have that surgery, unless you're like, no, I'm still going to give this a run. I don't know why you'd have it if you're like, I'm only going to play five times a year, but maybe it was enough even for that to be like, I can't even play five or six times a year if I don't do this. I don't know, but I mean, I doubt I have a surgery like that if I'm not trying to keep competing. So I hope, and I'm not driven near as hard as he is. So I really hope I'm just not really ready to let go of Tiger, even though he's 47 years old. Like, I think I just see him still being able to compete. So,
yeah, I don't know. That'd be I think he's awesome to see him come back one more time and just, you know.
We keep saying that. In your heart, do you think he could ever win a tour event again, or do you think he can win a major? Like, what do you think in, like, actuality he's going to be able to capable to do?
I think that he'll only play majors. And I think that he would only have a chance. The walking thing is crazy. Like, how hard Augusta is to walk. That's the tough part. And if you have a fused ankle, I don't know. It's a tough ask. I want to see it more than anything. If I don't know what the chances are of him riding a cart, but I feel like that.
None.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Okay. So you're not hopeful. It sounds like you're not hopeful that he like competes again.
I'm not going to get,
but he may be at a tournament, but I'm saying like actually competes. Like you see his name on the front of the leaderboard. He's attacking it on a Saturday or a Sunday with a chance to win.
Well, that's the thing. If he tees it up again, I'll have hopes that he can win because based on what he said in the past and how he can play and how well he knows just course management, just that itself, that if he is playing, he thinks that he can win it.
Right. Fair.
So yeah, if he plays the major again, I'll have my hopes up.
Yeah, I feel like I have to have my hopes up because if not, then golf never, for me, as far as just watching golf, like will never be as, I think that's the kind of what almost, I mean, I don't want to say keeps me in it because I will continue to watch golf even after Tiger Woods doesn't play golf anymore. But there is a part of me that like is still in it for what could happen down the road. And I think if like that chapter finally closes officially and it's just like he's more of a ceremonious golfer at the majors and then, you know, goes to play the senior tour, which maybe I'll finally watch the senior tour if he goes on to it. I don't know. He's only 3 years away from it and I just can't imagine. If he does play it, I just feel like, I mean, don't you feel like he just destroys the senior tour?
Yeah, I would think so.
He's got to just go destroy it.
Yeah, as long as he's healthy and can get around the course, definitely, yeah.
Well, he said he'd ride a cart on the senior tour.
I don't know, like, what his ambition would be, though. Like, would he want to do that? Or would he want to just save his energy and... If he's going to be playing on the senior tour, he'd probably just rather play the four tournaments a year in the majors.
Yeah. I mean, I think he'll continue to play the four majors for a while, kind of like Jack and Arnie did until it's just like, you know, they'll have a big, like, this is my last Masters ever at six, like he's like 65 where he can't compete. But I, you know, I almost kind of think this is going to sound funny, but he's going to almost have like, if he does decide to do the senior tour, I think he has like a live style schedule where it's like, I'm going to play 10 senior events a year and they're going to be record breaking attendance for a senior PGA event ever. I play the four regular majors. I play the four senior majors. And then maybe one or two appearances. Like if he continues to host like a Riviera, he'll play in that. Or he'll play in this like, you know, father-son thing. Or he'll play in a match or something like that where it's just like, yeah, we get to see him 8-10 times a year on TV, four on the senior. I mean, I just feel like he'll win the freaking senior Grand Slam. Like he'll just go out there and... I mean, you saw how Mickelson, when he was doing the senior tour, he was just like... Like it seemed like he won every single time he went out on the senior tour.
Yeah, I hope we get that. I hope that he's healthy enough to come back and do that. That would be amazing.
It'd be crazy to see. I mean, I never thought that I would even see. As a younger guy, I was like, Tiger Woods will never play on the senior tour because he won't, like, this sounds really bad, but he's like, he's not going to lower himself to, like, basically a retirement league. Like, that's what the senior PGA tour is. It's still competitive, but it's like the best retirement program ever is like these guys who could no longer compete go and play in these events that there's no cut. It's only 3 days. So you're basically guaranteed a payday every weekend you play. And they're still very good. Nice. I mean, like, I have no disrespect. In fact, you know, one of our good buddies at Curated plays on some senior tour events. And I have nothing. I don't take anything away from that because it still takes a tremendous amount of talent and focus and practice to be that good. My only point is, I think the greatest of all time has really nothing to prove on the senior PGA tour.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, it's all speculation until it happens. So I'm just waiting for that next slow-mo Instagram video where he's hitting another shot and we all just, like, you know, lose our mind at like a quarter chip shot. And then we just wait for months. Then it's like a pitch shot, and then it's a driver, and we're still just like, let's go.
So we'll see. Hopefully that happens sooner than later, because that was crazy when that did happen.
Those were so good. Man. Just like, awesome. Whoever knew that a 4-second slow-mo video, and it, you could just be so excited for. Wow, it was wild.
Yeah, that swing is like ingrained in my head. Like, I probably remember that video clip forever.
Right, both of them, like the pitch shot and the driver swing, you're just like, what am I viewing right now? Like, yeah, anyways. All right, well, I think we've covered a lot of ground. We'll see what happens. Wyndham Championship this week. I think the big storyline there is, can JT make a move? There's a couple guys, but he's pretty much the focal point now of, can this finish do something for his Ryder Cup hopes or his FedEx Cup hopes, all those kinds of things. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week. I'm sure there'll be plenty of play on social media between now and when we chat again about it. And so anyways, Brady, thanks so much for being on. If you want, Brady's on Instagram as @the.golf.expert. So check him out there. He's also on Curated. He is available. Just DM him, and he's actually a real person who can talk to you. So, yeah, we have no teams. We do all of this on ourselves. So thank you guys for watching. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Please, as every podcast you've ever watched has said, like it, follow us. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you can get podcasts. We're there. We're also on YouTube, Parnun Podcast. So please, please follow us, share it, like it on Instagram, send it to your friends, all of the same stuff that every podcast tells you to do. Leave us a review on Apple. That actually really does help us get found and get viewed. And we will see you guys next week. Thanks so much. See ya.